Autoscopia is a psychological condition in which the sufferer sees a double of themselves in real life, and i.e. their own doppelganger in the real world. When it comes to the internet, when you see your doppelganger, it doesn't look as you are as a material physical entity. Actually, this is the true you, the true material identity that is generated from internet searches. You put your name in. Hi, I'm Barack Obama. What do I look like? This is a composite of all the images of me, and this is what I look like in the three-dimensional sculpture. Identity on the net is completely pulverized, external, data-based, and so this recomposes what it is that you really are, as opposed to the small, miserable, pulsing, fleshly thing that you think that you are.
Into a kind of a sound work, so I'd just like to play that.
By a deputy, so it's still that's something that could happen this afternoon. But before that, I do want to say something about still life, given that people have been talking about it, and there was a kind of like vaguely mental thing I said at the end of that last presentation, which was of course this technophiliac hatred of wetware, which continually returns returns in a number of different ways. Even when you're talking about still life, it's obviously different in other languages, but in English, people have stopped hearing what a still life actually is. A still life is a still life in the sense that it's stilled, it's deanimated, it no longer has any life, and it's no longer life. That's one sense. Another sense of the word is it's still life. It's not death. It's not life. It's the kind of survival. It's life survival. It's still life. It's what it is.
Example. Yeah, this is my most recent photo. And then if you scroll down, there's just a whole list of all the kind of composite text that you get. Because when you look at screens these days, it's not just we're not just in an image-based culture. We're not in a screen-based culture. To also advert to one of the papers before, there's no disappearance of the screen. There's actually now a ubiquity of the screen. In fact, any surface, no matter what, can become a possible surface for a projection. And it's one of the things I think that why we are in a kind of a post-critical art age is that there's no bit of materiality that can't be kind of transmuted into any other bit of materiality. A flower, a face, like a wall, all of these become possibilities for projections and projections of all kinds. So you become a sort of screen for yourself in this sense. And what it does is introduce a new kind of what I guess we're going to be talking about, a new performativity of the image. As we talk about it, there's a number, we don't want to become kind of connoisseurs of our own artwork, like ingenious as it is, or in Ted's version, kind of like dutiful exegetes, biblical exegetes of our own, you know, like bureaucratically funded, you know, design program. But nonetheless, there are a number of people that we do want to mention in this regard, particularly, and some of them have been mentioned already, but we're going to, I think, talk mainly about...
talk about the work and then go into
all
the
right.
thing. All right, so just to... we'll talk just in a little bit of detail about how the work is constructed and then go through the kind of logical progression of thinking on media theory that we kind of arrived at in collaboration with making this work. I myself work in the area of real-time 3D virtual environments, which is both in the world of new media art and also in the broader world of contemporary art, deeply unfashionable. But it's something that I've been working in for a long time now, and something that has, I think, a lot of relevance in its underlying negotiations that need to occur in order for anything to be modulated into a display register of any kind, be that visual or audio or indeed any other kind of humanly perceptible register. This is an example of such a kind of a modulation that happens. It exists in the multi-user 3D virtual environment of Second Life, again, deeply unfashionable.
Sometimes for good reason.
Yeah. And the work is, you know, getting a bit... It is a bit old now. Hopefully this is the last time we'll talk about it. But
are you considering a career change?
The way it happens is that it exists in the real-time 3D world. It also exists on the web, and it also has its own kind of autonomous Twitter account. What happens is that whether in the real-time 3D environment or on the web, you can approach the work and type in a name. The work then goes and searches 27 different search sources on the internet, some of which are quite invasive, particularly if you are an American.
They need to be invaded.
It searches those 27 search sources and kind of composites any images that it can find that are tagged with that name that's been searched upon, and just kind of composites them together. And as Justin was alluding to before, it gets, it's a very crude kind of an algorithm where it composites basically based on full stops. So any of those search sources that yield a sentence with that name in it will be grabbed, and then once it reaches a full stop, it'll just find another sentence. And so what happens is that in the 3D environment, it builds dynamically an audiovisual sculpture out of, there's a, like a shard, so to speak. We're reticent to vocabularise it in terms of extant material phenomena, but as some people have already said today, vocabularisation is a real problem when trying to talk about these kind of things, and so one does ultimately rely on precedent. But these shards each have their own little piece of artificial intelligence based on the nature of the search results that it's been informed by. That will determine its size, its colour, its opacity, its rate of animation, and the sound that it makes. These spawn together and in a kind of a composite sort of a unit, and then over the space of about an hour, it kind of falls apart, drifting away and kind of slowly losing its identity and eventually dying. At the same time, it publishes this composite web page to the World Wide Web with very precise and exact metadata, in order that, of course, it will then exist on the web and be catalogued again by search engines. And so it's really contributing to its own myth, its own identity. It's a composite identity. It's completely made up only from external data sources, but once it is kind of codified and formalized into this web page, then it exists on the web. And as we know, everything on the web is true. So it gets catalogued by all of those search engines that have previously been used to generate it, catalogued as true, of course, and then again, in a kind of recursive sort of cycle, gets catalogued again and comes up as search results for itself.
And it's it keeps tweeting its existence. So what this does is like bump itself up the search ending list. So Autoscopia is the name. It's a technical name from psychiatry. Nonetheless, if you search for Autoscopia now, our website comes up top twice, even though it's done absolutely nothing of any real value to anyone. and it's like displacing a whole series of very serious people who do in fact talk about Autoscopia in a reasonable and intelligent fashion.
Yeah. And we use the same technique to write the paper for the that went along with the work. So the fundamental operation that is occurring here, and this is really what we want to talk about today, is the modulation of data. And to me, as a practitioner of this in this kind of field, this is the key action that the practitioner performs, is the construction of frameworks of parameters or protocols for the modulation of data. Because once something is rendered as digital data, it's like a formless... It's the great leveller. All things exist as digital data and therefore can be modulated out into any display register. And again, display not necessarily meaning the visual register. So an image can be modulated out as sound. A database of American social security numbers can be modulated out as an image and so forth. And so really the action of the practitioner becomes the establishment of the framework of parameters by which the data is then modulated into the display register. And this is this work is an example of that. But it's something that we feel is absolutely fundamental to the practitioner in the digital age. Whether you're getting the source from the material world, digitizing it and then modulating it back out into the material world along the lines of some of the works that we've seen today, it still necessarily goes through this modulation stage where it becomes simply formless data, and at that point can be modulated back out as anything.
Yeah, like, well, I guess as we were saying before too, I mean, it's not like there's a disappearance of the screen, but a becoming screenability of absolutely everything as a result. In a kind of, I guess, analogous way, there's the comparability here is a kind of banalization of modulability. It's a modulability of in which, for example, I think of like relational art. The web just banalizes everything that relational art thought of as critical, for instance. A relational object being nothing other than its relationship to other objects, to which it gestures towards without being able to express fully. And so therefore, I mean, the classic relational art object is paradoxically only a part of itself and essentially transforming endlessly appearing, disappearing simultaneously, showing that its powers of gesture infinitely in excess of its own finite expression. Yeah. I mean, one of the things about, like, digital culture, can we say, these days, is that it renders that a banal fact of everyday existence. It doesn't make it something that has any critical potential whatsoever, in my opinion. Mm. And I guess the other thing that I'd say is that it, and this probably goes back to some of the papers earlier, is that it simultaneously ensures becoming obscure of indexicality.
Yeah.
One of the things about indexicality, the whole of the 20th century post-Peirce, I can say this in both analytic philosophy and so-called continental philosophy, was a radical destruction of what it means to be an index. An index, technically, as we saw this morning, is defined by Peirce between being a symbol, which has only a conventional or an arbitrary link to what it refers, an icon is meant to resemble it by some sort of iconicity, whereas the index is meant to be in a causal relationship with its object. No smoke without fire, as the phrase has it, but as the great French psychoanalyst Jacques Lacan said, no smoke without a smoker. One of the points of this is to say, even in the realm of digital data, once again a banalization of that, it's not an absolute destruction of indexicality, but whatever it's pointing to, causes become obscure in that vicinity. I could think of some really nasty examples which I'm prepared to share with you after if you want to ask, but we should probably go on.
All right, how are we going for time? 5 minutes, okay. So we just quickly run through, these kind of thinkers, but I guess it's all underwritten, if you like, in the what is now, I guess, a truism, the McLuhanistic idea with which we're all familiar, that every new media contains all prior media as content. This is, perhaps self-obvious in our contemporary culture, but the implications for that in digital media are vast, and we know that all prior media can exist within digital media on the network, but often what is forgotten is the excess that is created by that convergence. We live now in, if you like, a post-convergent era where we are living in the excess that is created by the convergence of all prior media, and that's where we like to think that our work exists, in that excess, and that McLuhanistic idea is one that kind of underwrites our readings of these, and we'll just very quickly list, first of all, Groys.
Well, I guess we've got a number of famous new media names here, and names are Boris Groys, Bolton Grusin, who have been spoken about, Ian Bogost, Mary Flanagan, Alexander Galloway and his friend Thacker, a couple of others, and they all have something to say about this, but for one reason or another, I guess what we're trying to promulgate is post-convergence really a neologism?
Definitely submitting that for the competition.
If you don't like it, a biothanatophilia would be my other one.
Okay.
Which is, is it alive, is it a dead? Well, we don't know, we love it anyway. Isn't it exciting? Boris Groys talks about in digital media we have a new form, and this might go back to something that Ted Kaless said earlier as well, to a kind of new form of iconicity in which the data package into which the image, every image that's a digital image, has to be remodulated out again every time it's a performance, because it always takes on not only site-specific, screen-specific, etc. characteristics. And so rather than a kind of Benjaminian destruction of an aura, we now have a kind of a new erraticism of data itself as the kind of the invisible, as he capitalises it, the invisible new god. But of course it's just a material new god, or rather a digital new god, and a completely artificial god in which the invisible god himself has now become nothing but a sequence of ones and zeros. This is Groys's basic position.
That's Groys's thing, yeah.
And then therefore every single image has to be a performative act in and of itself. And so the image, under the conditions of digital networking, networked media, is necessarily, every image is now an actualization of a potentiality which can never be made visible, and it shows itself as such.
Yeah. And what he does, and we think what a lot of these other writers do, whilst we have, there are a lot of useful, very useful ideas that all of these writers generate, they all seem to just miss this act of modulation as being crucial within the performance, to put it in Groys's terms, of anything of digital media. Bolter and Grusin do that. They're you know, their concept of remediation, it's been very influential, and for a very good reason, that it is a very clear and useful kind of an idea, and certainly immediacy and hypermediacy get a really good run, especially in the field that I teach in, computer games, these notions. But again, this excess that is created by this convergence, or even the negotiation of the immediate and the hypermediate at the same time, just seems to be missed in their concepts of remediation.
Although one of the things that I have to say has been playing across the entire debate today is that for Bolter and Grusin, I think this was spoken about this morning in the still lives that we were showing, the still lives with bugs, is that their point is that this is never not a feature of media. Media, on the one hand, always tend towards the presentation of immediacy. You could nominate that as affect or intensity, depending on what you like. I think presence is a terrible word for it, but nonetheless, people like it, go ahead. On the one hand, media always do this. They always attempt to present an immediacy and disappear as they present that immediacy, and simultaneously and paradoxically always draw attention to themselves as the means by which they're this is being presented to you, and that is never not the case. And
that's right, indeed, the
point of Bolter and Grusin saying this.
Yeah.
And so people will tend to come down in their accounts on one side or another, but that misses the point of remediation, i.e. it's remediation and it's remedial. You are constantly in a remedial in the sense that we're all slightly retarded, we're all slightly behind this, and we're going to have to be shown it again and again and again and again, which is also part of the education that one now has to have before the image. In fact, it's one of the problems with contemporary pedagogy is that we're always, on the one hand, being presented with remediated materials, and we're always going to be forced simultaneously to be forced to learn how to read them again and again, even though they're exactly the same as all the other images that all seem to be that we've already seen.
Yeah.
All right, that's it. Fantastic. All right. Thank you.